Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This one has a mouth. So you're saying normal greys have mouths?
Aleister Crowley's friend Lam does.
They got fuckable throats, that's what we're saying. What?
I guess so.
What?
Welcome back, Commander.
Greetings, Commander. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, it's just like the new like assistant, the new assistant at XCOM, just like hello, Commander. Just like
I'm the intern, like faceless guy who gives you all your missions, right?
Yeah. I am Central, Peter O'Donohue, and I am joined by
Ethan. I'm intern Central.
Yeah,
Central intern. Intern me Central.
James Miller, and I'm a demolitionist.
Okay, very good. That's a very useful class if you know how to use it. In honor of Jordan Peele's Nope hitting theaters, and that being the first Hollywood movie I'll have a credit in, I figured we'd do some alien shit. Today's episode was actually requested by non-patron Ninja Platypus over on Discord, which is linked below. I don't know who upvoted it. I actually went to our shared Google Doc where people can also leave their requests. It had been upvoted 3 times by other people. I just got the impression that it was like way more requested than I thought it was because people talk about XCOM all the time that I was just like, yeah, some patron must have said something. So anyway, request's a request, and I hope you enjoy.
Yeah.
Are you going to do the have we played it or whatever? So I have a good experience, or I have one experience that's kind of funny with it. But
no, actually, okay. for the first time ever, I was not going to ask you guys what you thought about the game.
I played one of the first levels on PlayStation. I had a copy on PlayStation. I also have an unopened copy for PC still for XCOM 2.
Yeah, you gave me the sleeve off of your PC copy because I really like XCOM 2, and I was like, oh, you know, I don't have a box. I really like the artwork, and we were like over after an episode, and you were just like, oh, here, and like opened the container under your couch.
Yeah, it's still
and
there.
Was just like, here, take this. You can have it. And I was like, oh, cool. So like Jamie gave me a box to replace my Steam copy of XCOM 2 that I have.
So I played, and I got up to the end. You had to defuse a bomb. So I played the whole way through. Like, had that all, like, you know, you miss your 95% shots, all that fun stuff. And then I got to the end where you had to defuse the bomb, and I had one turn left till the bomb went off. And I didn't know the button to defuse the bomb, so I pressed skip turn by accident, which was hard too. And I just walked up to the bomb and then skipped my turn, and it blew up in my face. And then I was like, fuck this, I don't want to do this level again, and I never played it again. And that was...
Oh, no.
Yeah. That was...
Yeah, I've never beaten either of them. I've put a lot of hours into one, and I put a fair amount of hours into two. I definitely enjoyed one, like Enemy Unknown and then Enemy Within, which is so fantastic. Enjoyed them a lot. But yeah, just always got to a point in the game where I was min-maxing too hard, and I, you know, kept restarting because I play Fire Emblem, where it's like you can't lose a single character in Fire Emblem, obviously, but it's like, I mean, less important in XCOM. It is important to a certain degree. If you lose like one of your veterans, like it definitely hurts.
Yeah.
But I've never beaten either of them. I've gotten close to the end in both games.
I'm pretty familiar with the gameplay and stuff. I've seen a lot of it. I actually watched Ethan a bit. You used to be my neighbor. You were playing 2 at the time, and I watched a lot of the 2 gameplay.
Yeah, I played XCOM Enemy Unknown, and I did finish it. I never played Enemy Within. And then I played and finished XCOM 2. However, I never finished the DLC for that one, the War of the Chosen. I bought War of the Chosen on sale for like $6 when I was like on the razor's edge of a burnout at work, like whatever, like 4 or 5 years ago now. And like the hard game with the permadeath on your soldiers was not the best media for someone who is like like 1 minute away, like 1 second to midnight away from a fucking psychological breakdown. So I never ended up finishing it. But my strategy for not losing soldiers was I did save scum. I would restart an entire mission if I lost a veteran, unless I made a very stupid mistake. So I did have like personal rules to get through the game where it's just like, if you saw something play out where you're just like, honestly, rookie mistake, like I got that guy killed, I would like continue the game with like their death in the memorial. But if it was just like, wow, you missed your 96% and the enemy got a fucking 12 damage crit on a 3% shot from a different time zone, suck my dick, that's XCOM, baby, I'd be like, well, I'm gonna restart this fucking mission.
Exactly. Or I mean, XCOM 2 did it worse than XCOM 1, I found, but it was like, oh, by the way, like you have your sniper in the back, it's like, oh, by the way, there's drop units and like six of them just dropped in behind your guy because like it's turn 7 and that happens on this level, so now your guy's dead. And it's like, well, okay, like couldn't really have strategized against that one, you know, which I know is the point, and I'm sure any true blue diehard XCOM fans are calling us pussies right now. But
I played the real hardcore version of XCOM, which is Mario versus Rabbids.
With permadeaths or not, Iron Man permadeaths in Mario Rabbids.
Whenever you watch Peach get shot and it goes into a cutscene of a live action Peach just like taking four in the chest, falling down and like gurgling
like
and stuff.
Like in Platoon, like she's got her arms out in Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, I definitely like the additional difficulty in XCOM 2 because it does make for better war stories, as like the game devs have like called them. Because I remember, like, obviously I design a lot of my characters based on like characters, like soldiers that I had generated from the first game who survived. I like remade them, and then I would also give them, I also made like people I know who I have nicknames for, like my sister or some of my friends. And there was one mission that I was so proud of where my sister got knocked unconscious turn one of a mission, and then I had to have a different soldier haul her to safety through the entire mission under sniper cover. So like sometimes shit goes pear-shaped, but like if you can come back from it, it's like some of the most fun you could ever have. Or like if you like hack one of those mechs that can smash down walls behind enemy lines and you just like turn it around and just trample everybody, like when it goes well, it goes really well, and when it goes bad, it goes really bad.
Very fun game for sure. Like I do think it's just like, it's too, like, I think what it became to me was just like too long, if anything, because like you're restarting missions so often. I just like, I lost steam on it more than anything, but did very much enjoy it. And Peter, I gotta say, you gotta play Enemy Within, man. That DLC, it changes the game, man. Like the meld mechanic, so there's like two basically there's two new like research routes that you can go, basically, where you get this stuff called meld in missions, which is like optional like bonus resource that you can pick up while you're on a mission, and you can use that to like upgrade certain soldiers, and you can either go like transhuman, like you inject them with like alien DNA, so you have to like capture alien bodies and you can research them and you can get like some of their powers, or you just get like full mecha suits and you just like transhuman up out your guys, and then you give them like cutting off your arm today and replacing it with a robot flamethrower or whatever, like but makes the game much better, in my opinion.
It's on sale for $8 Canadian right now. So depending on how much fun we have in this episode, I might just buy it in 2 hours.
It's like $3 American right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure I own it on my phone on one of my Google accounts, but
yeah, you've got a lot of burner Google accounts.
you know.
They left so many bad reviews on Chrono Trigger that he just had to get it.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger hater 1 through 69 are all.
Exactly.
So anyway, also I did want to cover here, just based on this episode, this is a call out. I'm calling you out, John Cena, to the guy who wants us to do Green Lantern. This was gonna be a Green Lantern episode, but I got lost and confused and had shit to do this weekend. So if you could just DM me a starting point, that would be fucking great.
That was so weird. Right as you said that, he popped up as playing Witcher 3 on Steam.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, really?
Too, yeah.
All right. Well, speak of the devil and he'll appear. But yeah.
I mean, you're really setting yourself up to fail with this one, Pete. I wouldn't have mentioned anything, but that's on you now.
I want to do it. I want to kill. Sometimes I like putting a bullet in a meme, and it was my intention, but I did get lost and scared, and I was just like, I also hate ruining the surprise for the loser titles of the future.
Someone, I'm not even going to dignify them with a name, but they asked me to do Ape Escape, And then I was like, oh, I tried, but I'm like having a hard time finding like the lore or like the storyline that I want. And they're like, oh, well, like your excuses, all this stuff. And now they've talked so much shit about it. I think I'm just not going to do it out of spite for that one.
Never ruined it
for yourself. Like if you
and
for just
everyone
been a
else,
normal
for player. Everyone else who wanted Ape Escape, yeah.
Yeah. You played yourself.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So if you like difficult turn-based games, XCOM's a great choice. There's also Mario and the Rabbids, which is a little bit easier. Yeah. I've also heard of like Phoenix Point and Xenonauts, which are in the spirit of this. Heard good things about both. Have not played either, but I think Phoenix Point is on Game Pass if you want to try it for free, opposed to getting XCOM for $8 like I will.
The Rabbids one is probably still $80. It is really fun, but yeah, it's... Yeah. All the weapons are fun. You get to play as all your fun Nintendo characters, but yeah, Nintendo will be themselves and never give you a sale.
Yeah, and for the tabletop fans out there, there are 3 Shadowrun games by Harebrained Schemes. I personally fucking hate them, but I know they're popular with some people. And then Battletech, they also did, which I find tolerable because of the brand, but I'm not a big fan of Harebrained Schemes overall. Anyway, XCOM. The first XCOM game came out in the Paleolithic, shortly after man's taming of fire in March 1994. Mm-hmm. And the original game actually is set in its own future of 1999. The turn one is January 1st, 1999.
Okay, so this is the war against Y2K, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, they're trying to stop the bugs, man.
They're trying to
stop the bugs.
Yeah. Aliens tried to break our banking machine.
Yeah. They're like the aliens are the guys who like didn't put in the one line of code that kept the entire financial system on like afloat. So XCOM was called XCOM Enemy Unknown here in Quebec, in Europe, and in Australia, and everywhere else it was called XCOM UFO Defense.
Oh. And Ethan, I don't know if you realize, but it was published by 2K, so fighting the Y2K thing. There's something there. Y2K?
Y2K?
Why? So, following multiple UFO sightings and alleged abductions, the world's most powerful nations convened in Geneva to establish XCOM, which was in the old games and still is short for extraterrestrial combat.
Why did you say it like that?
What do you mean?
Was in the old games and still is.
Well, because there's some things that they changed, like the old games from the 90s are no longer canon. Enemy Unknown is a reboot, technically.
Okay, I see.
I mean, I would have gotten to that point to like later on, but like spoilers, the game that came out in 2012 is a soft reboot of the series, basically.
Okay, sure. Yeah, just your wording of saying like it used to be and also still is confusing.
Okay, yeah, I guess that is a kind of a weird way to.
And it probably like, still.
I thought maybe you're having a stroke. I don't know.
No, there's no new. They didn't like retcon in a new backronym for XCOM. It doesn't mean anything else.
I was wondering if like one of like the intermediary games like changed it and then they changed it back again, like they like double backronym almost, you know?
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, and you said retcon, which is actually short for retaliation combat.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct. I have not played Retaliation Combat yet, but it's on sale for $8, so I might pick that up at the end of the show.
And combat is Spanish, right? It's like with bat, you retaliate with a bat.
Yeah Retaliation Combat. So over the course of the first game from the 90s, it's discovered that the invaders are coming from Cydonia, which is a region of Mars. Cydonia became famous due to a rock formation that, due to the shadows at the time, looks like a human face. So if you've got access to the script or have our Discord, you can open up the first spoiler image and take a look at this Martian photo.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. That does look like a little face.
It really does. I hate that there's just a picture of a guy who shit himself right above.
It's also really spooky because my wife is painting in the next room over and she just started banging when I like unspoilered the face. I was like, ugh, what's going on? He's like, he's knocking at me.
It's funny. It really just like is like all the conditions were perfect for these shadows because obviously like the wind on Mars has completely changed the face of this mountain. And like, I don't know what other kind of weather they have on Mars other than just like wind and sandstorms. But like, if you look at a current image of the Cydonia region, it doesn't look anything like this anymore. Like, the face is completely eroded. It's gone.
There's one that kind of, I'm looking at a picture right now. There's, like, a couple, like, face-like things that you can, if you, like, really, like, try, you can kind of picture them. This one kind of looks like a skull. I don't know. But, yeah, there's not that specific spooky face. It does seem fun.
Yeah, it's like perfect light, perfect timing. And so, yeah, that's why Cydonia became famous. This photo obviously has its place in a lot of UFO conspiracies. And also, since it's early on in the episode, I'll come clean. And this was like a thing, like, I'd be more comfortable talking about politics than this. I think UFO conspiracies are like fun and completely harmless compared to a lot of other conspiracies. I don't believe in alien contact with Earth at all. I think every abduction story is bullshit. I don't think anyone has ever seen a fucking UFO. I don't believe it at all, and I'm sorry. I think they're fun and cool. Like, my buddy's girlfriend is, like, a member of MUFON. Like, she has, like, a card where it's, like, the, whatever, like, the some kind of UFO society for, like, true believers.
Okay.
But, like, I personally, I think there's a mundane explanation for, like, every UFO story that isn't just guy with a shitty cell phone camera wanted attention from the news for a day, basically.
So we're broadcasting this out into the space. So aliens, prove Peter wrong. Pick him up and probe him.
Yeah, probe him.
Somebody, it doesn't even have to be aliens. Just somebody probe Peter, would you? Don't be so uptight.
no fun. Doesn't believe in UFOs. I don't know if you guys do at all, like from like your personal side.
No, not
really. No. I mean, I am all for, like you say, Pete. I am all for these groups of people who go out and are like, aliens are coming. Let's watch for flying saucers or whatever. They just want to get out and like be out in the country in the summer and like look at the stars, look for UFOs. Absolutely. Like the Fox Mulder, like X-Files, like I want to believe. Go nuts. When they turn harmful, as you know, cults so often do, like that's definitely, you definitely take umbrage with it, right? But like, just on its surface, it's fine. On its surface,
clear, I believe in UFOs. I don't believe in aliens. Like driving these UFOs, it's like, oh yeah, that was just a weird weather phenomenon, or that was someone was testing a plane.
That flying object sure is currently unidentified, right?
Like,
as far as I go, like I know some people are hardcore into it. Like I think it's fun, and again, totally harmless to believe in aliens. Like they sell all like those goofy little plushies in Roswell. Fine, you know what? sell your bead necklace with the little alien head in the middle of it.
Yeah,
who cares? Excuse me. So there isn't a whole hell of a lot of lore behind the old games, except what I think is kind of like an explanation as to why the games are like so hard and so hardcore for big dick real gamers.
Okay, sure.
The first game had a bug that would always reset the entire game to the easiest difficulty after the tutorial level. So people were complaining that like, yeah, it's fun, but it's a little bit easy. So the developers just made the second game, XCOM Terror from the Deep, which is set in 2040, wildly hard. But like we see with the popularity of Souls and Elden Ring and like Nioh or basically anything else, like people love difficult games. So the XCOM series remained difficult since the sequel, Terror from the Deep. Because it just, like, it resonates with people. People like a challenge.
I feel like people...
It seems to be because of a bug where the first one was too easy by accident just because it would undo your difficulty selector at the beginning.
I feel like people like difficult games if they're well-made and fair. Like, I don't know if people like difficult games that if 5% of the time when you hit a boss in Elden Ring, it just didn't count. You missed or whatever.
Exactly. People like well-designed, a curated challenge.
I mean, the FromSoft simps would defend it, right? Like, they would absolutely, like, if 19 out of 20 times, like, if you only hit 5% of the time when you actually hit, they would defend it, right?
They'd Morrowind's combat in Elden Ring would still have its, like, Twitter stands.
Yeah, exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Where you can't, your skill is your actual chance to hit.
It's just like in real battle. Like sometimes your sword will glance off of things and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see how they would do it. But...
Yeah, don't give them any ideas.
Yeah, why don't you just get good? No?
Yeah.
I'm still.
Bro, you just don't appreciate it. You probably just like started playing this series with Elden Ring, honestly. Like, you know, like I've been playing since Demon's Souls, so
I've
like...
been playing since Sekiro, okay? So like, I know what the fuck I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, the sequel, XCOM Terror from the Deep, is set in 2040 and reveals that the impact that killed the dinosaurs 66 million years ago was in fact a massive alien spacecraft called T'Leth. The aliens have now reawakened and have begun abducting people from coastal cities. I spoiled this line because I was a little bit drunk when I wrote it and didn't remember. Should be no surprise that this concept arouses me sexually. because the dinosaurs being killed by deep sea aliens is really fucking cool. And this is also spoilers for XCOM 2, Ethan and anybody else who hasn't finished it. There is the final cutscene after you beat the last boss in XCOM 2. When you destroy the alien base, you can see some of the wreckage in the ocean. Because I think it's like the giant ship like crashes into the ocean or some shit. You do see like a purple psionic rift starting to open on the sea floor. So if we ever get a XCOM 3, Firaxis right now is working on some Marvel bullshit, so we'll probably never see a fucking sequel to that game.
I like the picture on the other side of the rift. It's like an alien. They were trying to open a portal under Earth, and they actually opened it at the bottom.
Oh, just
of the
like
ocean.
Water pours out.
Yeah, like into the
put it off. Put it off.
Oh shit! It's like a burst pipe in your house. You're like, ah, fuck. What do we do?
Yeah, alien basement just like flooded. All their furniture is completely destroyed by what? Like, how much water is in the ocean? Like 10 quintillion gallons of water. Like, yeah. Comes into the ocean.
Yeah, this reminds me of when we opened the SCP, when they opened the Infinite Kittens universe and they just came
flying.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, check out our SCP episode. Yeah, so anyway, XCOM 3, at least, or it was hinted at that the concept of the undersea aliens will be coming back, is my lore boys canon for a potential XCOM 3 that is not currently in development as far as anyone knows.
Is it Turtle Rock that does this, or who is the developer?
Firaxis.
Firaxis,
that's right.
Civilization guys.
The guys who do Civ.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Thank God it's not Turtle Rock, Jesus.
They do what? Is that Battleborn and all that?
No, they did Evolve.
That's right, yeah.
Which I thought was a cool game, but did flop. And then they did whatever that Left 4 Dead ripoff was.
Yeah, Back for Blood or whatever.
Back for Blood, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That one.
They're also under the 2K umbrella.
I think they've worked on like Counter-Strike at some point, maybe.
Yeah, recall, so I remember seeing the Crow B Cat supercut, like the from the makers of Left 4 Dead is a stretch, because on the team of whatever, like 500 people who worked on Back 4 Blood, like 8 of them worked at Valve, and like 2 of them were some of the guys who worked on like CS 1.6 or something.
Okay. Wow,
okay.
Yeah. It's not true, but like that's like, you know, from the people who worked on Jordan Peele's Nope. If I make something one day,
it's cool. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Like it's a bit of a stretch.
Right.
Yeah. So the last battle of Teleth, which is the final mission of Terror from the Deep, ended up severely damaging Earth's atmosphere. So the third old game, XCOM Apocalypse, which takes place in 2090, takes place in like a very Judge Dredd cyberpunk inspired megacity called Mega Primus. And this is actually my favorite part here. Mega Primus was the first megacity constructed, and it was constructed on top of the ruins of Toronto, Canada. So if aliens came down now, they wanted to do
Toronto.
Was destroy the GTA, fucking take it. It is the only thing keeping Justin Trudeau in government. The aliens can fucking have it. Like,
they're like, wow, that Sion Tower. Imagine how big of a probe, a monster we could probe with that thing.
Yeah, that's what they want, yeah.
Yeah.
The Earthlings must be massive to have such a large probe.
Has a glass bottom so you can see where you're probing.
Yeah.
Well, so you can see through the probe, right? Because you want to see through the bottom to the top. It's, yeah.
And it has that rotating restaurant at the top for your pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, I want a ribbed, expensive BLT. So within Mega Primus, most people actually live in relative comfort, which is kind of surprising for a cyberpunk story, basically. But it does kind of have the standard slums. However, in this case, it's populated by human sectoid hybrids and androids. And sectoids are one of the alien races that we will get into. Portals begin to open around the city, and new, unrelated to the previous games, aliens begin to invade. And it falls to you, the player, to stop them. It turns out the main invading force wants to inject humanity with single-cell-sized psychic aliens called micronoids, who want to psychically enslave the planet from inside our bodies. And I thought this was a really, really fucking cool idea for that game, to have, like, microscopic alien invaders that are using a different invasion force that they've already enslaved to, like, control us from the inside. Because it's, like,
it's
so hard to detect.
Yeah, if there was to be an invasion like this, dude, like everyone would just wear masks. You know what I mean? Like everyone, like we'd be super safe, because like everyone would just like, you know, we'd probably all like know, like, okay, like
they're so small. How far could they jump? Probably not more than, I don't know, like 6 feet. We definitely like all just like stay apart from each other long enough that it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, cool.
You know what I mean?
We would definitely cooperate to solve this honestly deceptively simple problem, right?
Definitely.
I like how they're named after the old Domino's mascot, too.
Yeah,
the Micronoid?
They're all in there. Yeah.
That schizophrenic guy who went and held up a Domino's and tried to climb inside their body to control them psychically.
The Noid was actually, I think... Fragile Shark asked us to do a Noid episode. We could. There's like some sad parts to it, but
we'd have to do like all the fast food mascots to make a full episode. Probably we do Pepsi Man. We do the BK, the Sneak King trilogy. Oh, there,
yeah, the Burger King guy.
I don't have
plane.
A 360, but I do have Big Bumpin' and I do have Sneak King on 360. So we can
just missing one, dude.
Yeah, yeah. What is the third one?
Just Dance. Xbox 360 Kinect.
With the Burger King in it?
Yeah.
Or the world's... what is it?
Dance for your burger! Dance for your burger!
The Biggest Loser Xbox 360 Kinect.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Not just Dance, my bad.
Yeah, that we had at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
All three King games, they're called. Pocket Bike Racer was the first.
Oh, that's true. There was a motocross one. That's true. Or like a mini bike one.
A karting one, yeah.
I have big... the kart one is Big Bumpin', is it not?
Big Bumpin'.
Yeah. It's Pocket Bike Racer, Sneak King, then Big Bumpin'.
Yeah, we should have called our podcast.
I have a ladder, too.
Big Bumpin' and the boys.
Just Big Bumpin'. Welcome to Big Bumpin'.
We're starting a new podcast, everybody. We can start calling the Patreon bonus content Big Bumpin'. Welcome to Big Bumpin'.
Yeah. let's do it. You heard it here first, folks. So the new series, the newer games all kind of take older concepts. Like I said, the underwater thing, a lot of the alien invasion stuff, like some of it's recycled, some of it's reshuffled, some of it's kind of modified a little bit, but the newer game starting with Enemy Unknown from 2012, I think is the year, like reuses a lot of this stuff and then adds more. The new series timeline wise actually starts with the underrated, in my opinion, The Bureau, XCOM Declassified. Which admittedly is a mediocre third-person shooter, which is like a word salad title of that means completely nothing. You could never market it properly. but it is kind of good. It takes place in the 60s. So after the Second World War ended, the U.S. government set up the Bureau of Strategic Emergency Command, which, while not real, is like heavily based on a lot of the secret experiments conducted by the U.S. military during the Cold War. So, like, it's basically any combination of Majestic 12 or, like, the Stargate Project, which is a different one, or MK Ultra.
MK Ultra. Code Orange.
Yeah, so I do have a fun fact about MK Ultra in here. Some people who are completely off the conspiracy deep end, so way less safe than the UFO people, think that Alex Jones himself is actually a discarded MK Ultra test subject, and he's, like, so fucked up, because, like, when he was younger, he was less fucked up than he is now. So some people think that he was part of MK Ultra, and all the LSD and sexual abuse they did at McGill University here in Montreal gave him like psychological damage, and they just like released him into the wild, basically.
What? You can go to the university and they'll give you LSD
and sexual trauma. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Yeah.
they got, speaking of hazing on the bonus content, they did get in a bunch of trouble for hazing. Almost 10 years ago now.
Oh man.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I pity people who like really like buy into the conspiracy theories and again like really believe that like these things are happening, than people who are like kind of harmless with it and like, oh, I think hunting for Bigfoot is fun. Like, you go nuts, you crazy kid. Like,
yeah,
absolutely go hunt Bigfoot. And I feel bad for the people who like clearly are, you know, disassociating from society in some way to believe these like full-blown lies. But I gotta respect the people who are like, Alex Jones, like king conspiracy. No, dude, the conspiracy goes deeper, okay? Like him, he's like not in on it, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's a constant game of one-upping where it's just always like, oh, you think you got it figured out, man? Like, no way. I had a friend maybe 8 years ago or something like that, who was just super into all the conspiracy theories, you know what I mean? And he wasn't like, He was like combative when you tried to talk with him about it or whatever, but he was just like always like, you know, because he held to his beliefs. But just listening to them jump from like one thing to the next, like it's always like, okay, like why don't you believe people went to the moon? Like, okay, because of this. And then you present a bit of evidence. Then they're like, yeah, well, that's like one thing or whatever, you know what I mean? But like the chemtrails that the planes are leaving behind, you're like, okay, why do you believe that planes are leaving behind chemtrails? And they say, because of this. And you present them with a bit of evidence. Then they say, well, okay, yeah, but like the lizard people, you know, living under the crust of the earth. And it's just like, it's a constant, like, they don't even truly believe any one thing. Or I guess my friend didn't truly believe any one thing. It was just like constantly looking for that, like, I know the insider information, right? Was, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, probably why QAnon's so popular, because this world's all fucked up. There's not a lot we can do about it, but if we can feel like we understand a little bit more than the guy next to us, then yeah.
Exactly.
But Q also, like, I've mentioned this before, and obviously I know a lot, just like knowing someone who's like completely lost to it. Q does just try to like explain the mundanity of evil, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm perfectly okay with like the government just being evil, and that's not that interesting, because that's like kind of what it was set up to do in a lot of cases. But like trying to explain it is just like, people need the... I think it's hard to think that random bad things happen.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, if somebody's controlling it, whether it's reptilians or like some group of people, wink, wink, that are controlling everything, right? It's just like, well, that's a lot easier to understand, because at least random bad things aren't happening, because being random is scary and hard to understand.
Yeah. Right? And it's like, I mean, why does baby blood taste so good, you know?
Yeah, why does it make me feel so alive?
It keeps me so young all the time. I also do love, I can't remember what I was watching. I think I was watching like a Jon Stewart thing where they were talking about like how stupid the like children's blood makes you live forever conspiracy is. Cause like all the people who allegedly are powered by baby blood are like some of the oldest and worst looking people on the planet. Like exactly. clearly the adrenochrome farms don't work.
Oh, they're not working. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I can't remember. There's this one line that this guy said about, who's George Soros. He was just like, you think George Soros is drinking children's blood to stay youthful? The guy permanently looks like he's skydiving. Yeah. Because he's like so wrinkly and like saggy and shit. I was just, and I'm just like, that is like such a good joke that I'm going to remember forever. But yeah, anyway, back to fake conspiracies in these video games, not like the real stuff we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
In 1962, the Bureau of Strategic Emergency Command was still kind of getting ready under the command of Myron Falk, who is one of the characters in the Bureau. He, like, gives you missions and shit. Primarily, it was being used as a military base where the government could conduct secret experiments on an element called Illyrium, which is not exactly a magic rock, but, like, it's an alien substance. But if you want to take a drink, please do.
Yeah, it's a magic rock. Yeah. We'll call it a magic rock.
Yeah. This was being done at a place in Nevada called Groom Range, which is a real place in the Nevada desert, which military experiments were likely conducted. But yeah, it is a real place. Illyrium is a mysterious element that is hard to describe, but they know it's not from Earth, which is not unlike the debris that Lieutenant Colonel Jesse Marcel talked about after the 1947 Roswell incident in New Mexico.
Uh-oh.
So if you got the script, or you want to open that second spoiler, you can see Lieutenant Colonel Marcel with some of the spooky alien foil that he found in the woods.
Yeah, clearly he tried to make nachos and tried to not have to clean the pan, and has ended up with a bunch of extra aluminum foil that he's peeling off the bottom.
Really, it looks like there's stuck to the nachos. Bullet holes in the wall behind him.
It does
yeah,
kind
I
of
did,
look like
I did
bullet.
Notice that. Yeah, they got some paint chippage too. Yeah. I love how it's just like man holding alleged alien material, and we're just like, man, that wall's in bad shape. Like,
I mean, he's clearly holding aluminum foil. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that that's what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's looking at someone off camera like, huh? You see what I see?
It's also, I mean, yeah, it does seem like he's standing on, like, a pile of burnt frogs, maybe. I don't know what that, like, pile of, like, charcoal bricks next to him is, but...
Burnt frogs.
Yeah. So he said that the metal foil was not like anything from Earth when he was interviewed 31 years later by a UFO researcher named Stanton T. Friedman.
Yeah, I love how he also says the metal foil was like anything from Earth. Well, kind of sounds like it's like metal foil, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
You just described it as a thing from Earth, so I don't know.
So the official story, if you choose to believe it, is that an experimental balloon from something called Project Mogul that was equipped with a sensitive microphone built by the U.S. government to detect Soviet nuke detonations just failed and crashed into some guy's ranch. Also, the rancher, W.W. Mac Brazel, had found this shit and just put it in a bush out of the way because he thought it was annoying, but turned it over to the cops afterwards. So even the guy who found it wasn't like, yo, I found some alien bullshit out on my ranch. It was just like, wow, army garbage. Great.
Yeah, yeah. more army garbage. Thank God.
The rancher himself said it was some kind of foil, rubber, and wood. So
tactical trash. That's
basically
my, okay.
Yeah, I like the fact that the guy who found it was just like, yeah, it's like foil, rubber, and wood. Nothing weird. I'm just gonna leave it here, but move it out of the way. Yeah, basically what he did there.
Yeah, it was the 1950s. Littering wasn't a thing yet. Right?
It was 1947. Yeah. Even earlier.
He had shit to do too. I'd imagine he doesn't have to figure out what's going on. He's got farm.
He's got to make sure there's no, like, honestly, I think fucking rustlers were still more of a threat to his cattle than an alien balloon in the 40s in Nevada. So back in XCOM, Groom Range was attacked by the Zajari in 1962. The Zajari are very, in quotes, I guess, normal-looking race of aliens. Gray skin, big head, big eyes. They have vertical lips, but a normal horizontal mouth inside of it. And the only spoken words I remember from this game is that the player character William Carter at one point calls one of the aliens cunt face. which, like, I get it. It's got vertical lips. But that's clearly like they had written that line of dialogue and probably had to design aliens around it. Cunt face.
All right.
You can open the third picture there in the reference to see what the Zajari look like. They're nothing too special as far as alien design goes.
This is just a picture of a vagina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pete, gotcha.
Come on. Pete's peaches. He's posted in chat here.
Fucking got him.
Yeah. Loreboy's OnlyFans coming soon. What were we gonna call it? Bumping with the boys?
Big bumping.
Big bumping. Big bumping. Big bumpin'. Yeah, the name of the Lore Boys OnlyFans content.
Yeah, OnlyFans.com/big bumping. That's us. So director Myron Falk, player character William Carter, and real life man and first director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, escaped, and Carter armed and detonated a nuclear bomb to blow up Groom Range and the base therein. Following this, Falk changed the name of the Bureau to the Bureau of Extraterrestrial Combat, or XCOM. Little bit of Canadian ignorance here that I had to put in. I knew that the U.S. had a President Hoover at one point and totally thought it was J. Edgar Hoover, but it's a different man with a different face and birthday named Herbert Hoover.
Herbert Hoover.
Who Herbert made the dam?
J. Edgar. Don't know.
I think J. Edgar did. No. It wasn't. He was a general, right? In the 50s?
He was the first director of the FBI. I didn't look into that, but I know the Hoover Dam is named after fucking one of them.
What if it's just that big president, the really, really big one that did it?
Haft?
Yeah.
Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam was built by Henry J. Kaiser and Gordon Koff. I guess should have asked who is it named after.
Yeah.
Who was Hoover Dam named after? Herbert Hoover.
Okay.
Was named after Herbert.
And they made the vacuums too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hoover's in it, bruv.
So following the 1960 attack on Groom Range, Falk would move XCOM to Site X in Baja, California, of blast fame. And once everything is settled and comfortable, the events of the Bureau take place. I don't really remember a ton of this game, but it's pretty basic. It is just a third-person shooter where you have some, like, squad commands, and a lot of your companions, like, are randomly generated, and you can customize them a bit, and will die permanently if you don't rescue them in combat. Okay. And kind of like, honestly, Spec Ops The Line, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, it's like a mediocre third-person shooter that you can probably get for $1 and is worth playing, frankly. Like, it's a good, like, 10-hour experience or whatever.
I beat it since the last time we did it. I mentioned on the bonus content, but it was a good fun.
Spec Ops. Yeah. Not XCOM.
Spec Ops.
Not the Bureau.
The Bureau.
The Zajari themselves, the alien race that attacks, are not in any of the subsequent XCOM games and are not from the old ones, so forget about
it. I was going to say, you mentioned them, then you mentioned their pussy faces, and I was like, this doesn't sound like any enemy I remember from XCOM, but I've only played the rebooted tactical shooter franchise, so.
Yeah, they don't come back. So, before we move on to some of the aliens that actually still matter and have regular mouths, I think we should take a quick break.
a quick regular mouth break.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, Commander. I hope you enjoyed your ad.
No, welcome back, Commander.
Oh, I got your coffee. You've got the 60s coffee and the little styrofoam cup that's like spilling all over the place.
Exactly.
I burned most of my knuckles, but most of it's still in there. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. We flew the ship to Peru to get it. I hope you like it, sir. Thanks for fighting the aliens.
I like this. I like this character we've made up of the nervous intern at the underground military base.
To be honest, I don't know how I survived the invasion for this long, but I'm happy to be here helping.
Constantly tripping over himself, dropping papers all over the place.
Oh, I dropped all the meld. Oh God, hope I don't get psychic powers from it.
That's one of the characters I did not bring back in XCOM 2, is the guy that you have to give psychic powers to in XCOM 1, in canon, does sacrifice himself, so I did not bring him back.
Nice.
Yeah. Also, canonically between XCOM 1 and 2, the new ones, you canonically lose the first game, which is why the aliens are in charge in XCOM 2. They were just like, game's hard, everyone lost, so now we can do the, you know, now you're the resistance, basically.
Yeah, in 2, you're flying like a mobile base around, like
the Avenger. Yeah,
yeah. Like in 1, you have your underground base, I want to say. And I guess for anybody who hasn't played the games and doesn't know anything about them, it is like a turn-based tactical game where you move your units, you click on enemies to shoot, and there's a chance that they have to hit based on various stats. But when you're not in mission, there is like, and this was always my favorite part of the game, and it's usually my favorite part of these kind of games, where it's like there's base building and there's like tech trees, and you have to research different things and prioritize different things, and like you'll get missions that have like a certain number of days to complete, and you might not be able to get both of them done because you know, you don't have time to do to do both of them, kind of thing. And yeah, in the second one, you're in, it's the same concept, but you're in a mobile base that you're kind of like upgrading as you go, and like flight times are now a part of, they might have been a part of the first one as well.
No, because in XCOM Enemy Unknown, the official conspiracy term for these things are called DUMs, Deep Underground Military Base.
Okay.
Which some nuts believe are filled with mole children that Warren Buffett drinks blood out of or whatever. But in game is like an ant farm. In the ship that you have in XCOM 2 is called the Avenger, and it is basically, instead of digging deeper into the earth to make new workstations and like different laboratories and generators and shit, what you're doing is clearing out debris because it was like damaged when you stole it or whatever. So you clear alien trash so that you can set up whatever you need. You can put up all your pictures, all your you can put up your Einstein poster.
Yeah, exactly. it's like Fallout Shelter, which might be a more popular game, honestly, where
yeah
the underground base, and you just have different rooms, and you need enough power to operate like the different things. So it's like maybe you want to build your science lab, but you can't yet because you've tapped out power building all the strip clubs and you're dumb. No?
Yeah.
It sounds like a nice way to like keep progressing or whatever too, like between something that can be so punishing. It's like, oh, I'm building my little empire at the same time every time.
Exactly,
honestly, the actual like building and management of the dumb always stressed me out way more than like the character I based on my sister being shot in the head. Like, I was always like so bad at it.
That's always my favorite. All, like any kind of game like that, like base building, like sim, like it's the reason I like Minecraft too, right? Like I just want to chill and like worry about my base. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all for it.
Yeah, the developers refer to it, their development term for both like the dumb and also the Avenger in XCOM 1 and 2. They just call it the ant farm. Is like what they call that gameplay loop.
Yeah. Right.
Excuse me. So the XCOM organization continued to develop in secret after the events of the Bureau, XCOM Declassified, up until the events of XCOM Enemy Unknown, which, like I said, I think came out in 2012. Enemy Unknown begins with metallic pods like crashing into randomly assigned cities. So another cool aspect of these games is they're not exactly roguelikes or roguelites, but the first mission always takes place, or I guess the second mission, the first mission is always a tutorial. The second mission always takes place in a different city somewhere on Earth. The objectives are generally the same or similar, but like the first attack could be somewhere in Africa or in Asia or in Europe. And like where you build your dumb is your choice. Different continents have different passives. So like you have better engineers in Asia or more money in the Americas or better the scientific resources in Europe or and shit like that. So like you choose where to set up your base basically at the beginning. And that gives you a permanent passive for the rest of the playthrough. But it's mutually exclusive against all others. I think you can earn them or at least a variation of them later on if you have like FOBs, like forward operating bases on different continents, but that I might be just imagining that.
That's cool.
I can't remember either. I do know like, so like some of the missions are like fixed, but then you get a bunch of like randomly generated missions. Like there are like story missions, which are like always the same. And, like I remember in XCOM 2, like the first time a UFO like crashes, like you can shoot them down. You can like scramble jets to like intercept, like flying alien vessels or whatever. And you do that, and then you have to like go and you like pick through the wreckage or whatever. And I remember the first time that happens in XCOM 2, the first like opportunity you get to do that, you meet this like new class of alien, which I don't know if we're gonna talk about, who's like a crystal shard who like forms an energy body out of himself, basically.
We won't be talking about those, but that's because you get a. In XCOM 2, even the missions themselves can be randomly generated, but you get a fixed objective, and that's where you need to build the Skulljack, which is like, they were like, oh, interrogating aliens in the first game was too brutal, her methods. Yeah. The German scientist was too brutal, so in the second game, they build a holographic knife that you can stab into their brain and read their thoughts.
much chiller, honestly.
It's not holographic, I think it's like a laser or something, but something called a cyber knife. That's a like a hospital thing that they use to like do brain surgery and stuff.
Really?
And it's not called an MRI. It's not called like something scientific. It's just called cyber knife. And
then, that's pretty cool. Are you telling me that my neurosurgeon is not going to punch a holographic glove into my skull and read my thoughts when he's doing my?
I can't promise you won't. But
I promise. Yeah. Not one way nor the other.
We'll see. Can't remember what those aliens are called, Ethan. I think they're called outsiders or something.
I'm trying to find it, and it's not in the. It might just be Illyrium crystals, and then they make enemies from them. I don't know. I was trying to find it, but I was on the XCOM 2 wiki there for a second.
Yeah. But it's the one that looks like it. It looks like it has like a holographic woman's body, and when you kill it, the only thing left behind is like the helmet with the goggles on it, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And when you shoot at them, they always clone themselves, which is really fucking annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to read that thing's mind. And interrogation, that's cruel. So what we're going to do is stab a knife into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like XCOM 2, it has a lot more random stuff because, like I said, the objectives are fixed. But like you might go a couple of missions without seeing one of these aliens, meaning you're basically just grinding. You're training your soldiers. You got to bring out some squaddies to get them to improve, because at some point all your good soldiers might just get killed. And then you've got a bunch of guys who are like have soft, uncalloused hands because they've just been, you know, nervously serving coffee to other soldiers this entire time.
I was going to say it if you didn't. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. The guy with knuckle blisters because he's burned himself on coffee so many times. You're like... You know how to use a gun? But yeah, anyway, Ektom Enemy Unknown begins when metallic pods crash into a randomly assigned city somewhere on Earth. Then, like, civilians kind of start coming in and they start rubbernecking to be like, oh, what's going on? And getting their cell phone cameras out and shit. And then, like, a green mist kind of pours out of them and kind of it kills and then cocoons people inside of it. So that's how the aliens introduce themselves, is they start kind of dispensing this fog that creates these all this kind of green webbing all over the place. The mist itself seems to be a reference to the black smoke from H.G. Wells's War of the Worlds from 1898. The Martian tripods use a black smoke to kill people along with their heat rays. So, they shoot out these canisters out of them that kind of carpet the earth. I think it's inert after a while. I haven't read the book in a while, but it's inert after a while. So, like, battlefields are just covered in corpses and, like, this black sand, basically, after the tripods have come through and gassed everybody.
Cool. That'd be a war crime, those types of things, right? That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Geneva Convention applies to, like, I don't know if it applies to aliens, right? They wouldn't have signed it originally.
Yeah, I don't think they'd agree, for sure.
I think, well, like, did they write it? They probably, like, the wording is probably like, no Earth nation will ever use, you know, chemical weapons in war or whatever. They're like, we're not an Earth nation.
So this is Elon Musk's long con.
He wants to go to Mars to use chemical warfare.
Yep. Yep. All right. I mean, as far as like a creative wording long con, he absolutely would.
Yeah, anybody right. would. Yeah.
And yeah, con, of course, stands for combat. Long combat.
Exactly.
Combat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long combat is what is his plan right now. So the first mission of XCOM Enemy Unknown introduces the Sectoid, which I mentioned earlier. I had mentioned the human Sectoid hybrids as well. Those come back in XCOM 2, but the human DNA actually improved them, so they're much bigger and much stronger, because the actual, like, regular Sectoids are, like, 4 feet tall, little kind of golem-looking things. They rely mainly on psychic abilities, because physically they're not that imposing at all.
Yeah, they're like the kill all humans alien, right? Like, they're these are your gray men, right?
That's exactly it. These are your bread and butter alien. They are what are called grays. They're short. They got gray skin. These ones do not have pussy mouths. They actually don't have a mouth at all. And they got the big eyes and the big head. So they not very physically imposing, but psychic. So they're, you know, basically that sort of thing.
Right.
So the gray, or the Roswell gray, predates New Mexico itself, actually.
Cool.
New Mexico became a part of the Union in 1912, whereas the first alien bearing the hallmarks of the standard aliens we're talking about were described by Kenneth Fallingsby in his novel Mita, A Tale of the Future, where he describes small gray-skinned aliens with balloon-shaped heads. And this novel is from 1891.
Wow.
I had never heard of it and did not read it for this episode, but that's where we kind of get the basic description. H.G. Wells, back at it again in his 1893 article, The Man of the Year Million, describes people who had evolved into hairless, large-headed people without mouths. So again, kind of basically exactly what we're talking about here with the Sectoids. Mm-hmm. And I saw a few things in, like, when I was reading about this, about the Time Machine, which is also by H.G. Wells, where the surface-dwelling people called the Eloi in that book are also kind of described as this, but I haven't read that, and most adaptations or, like, artistic representations of a lot of Wells's work, for some reason, is really bad. So
because it's public domain, so anybody can... It's a free story, right?
Even the Spielberg War of the Worlds movie is like a shitty adaptation. I like the movie personally, but it's a bad adaptation of the novel.
Yeah, exactly. It's an action movie, right? Like,
yeah, with like a suspenseful scene when he's in the basement with Tim Robbins.
Yeah, it was good.
It is good.
I did enjoy it. The sound of the tripods make when they like that blah that they make. I think will always stick with me, honestly.
Yeah.
And then also there's like the lasers just turning people to like dust, right?
Yeah. So the heat rays turning people to dust is canon. Like, in the book, it is... in the book, they're invisible, because H.G. Wells was just like, yeah, it's directed heat, but you can't see that. So, like, he describes, like, the little Victorian village he's living in is like bricks crumbling with no and like people also evaporating basically as all the water instantly boils out of their bodies.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, the horn is also the thing that I remember from like when the first one comes out of the ground too.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's like such a good scene.
Yeah, there is. I remember that, and then I also remember the like one of the big early plot points was lightning never strikes the same place twice. Me, and I remember being like 12 and being like, I know that's wrong. Like,
yeah.
How do you not know that's wrong at this point?
Yeah,
they have like I think I don't know if it's the U.S. government, but one of these like big militaries has a torture device that it's just like this big thing that emits heat, and you could be in a building and it'll just like make everything so hot it's uncomfortable. It won't actually leave burns or anything on you, but it'll just like focus heat into a certain area, so you like
sounds like the U.S. government.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if anybody was going to I don't know, like militarize the beat your kids with a phone book to not leave any evidence, it was gonna be the fucking U.S. government.
Exactly. Yeah,
so they've got their phone book, Ray, isn't what you're telling me.
yeah their pillowcase full of oranges, Ray.
You need something to combat those terrible rioters and the BLM and Antifa movements, right?
I was going to say, the U.S. government really just is like the stepdad of the world, isn't it? Just like... and also, so back on the grays here, the fascinating lunatic Aleister Crowley also drew a big-headed being he called Lamb in 1917, which you guys can open the reference there. It looks exactly like an alien gray.
This one has a mouth. So you're saying normal grays have mouths?
Aleister Crowley's friend Lamb does.
They got fuckable throats, that's what we're saying. What?
I guess so.
What? Are you guys looking at me like that for? Sorry, the pussy mouth one really got me thinking.
This guy does have a weird throat though, yeah.
I mean, it almost looks like he has his lungs on the outside.
I thought he was tenting his gross little fingers. Like he's, I thought this thing was sitting kind of like Mr. Burns.
Yeah, you're the artist. But
this is like
that.
A police sketch of an alien, by the way, for those who can't see. It's like,
it is.
This is a deranged lunatic escaped from Mensa and you know, all my panties. And you describe it to the police sketch artist. And this comes out.
He was very smart. Okay, big head. Got it.
He's got a, you can see a vein that goes right up from his nose all the way to his forehead and then forks off in two directions, like that Robert Frost poem.
Yeah.
Got
a veiny forehead.
Got a veiny forehead, yeah. So the Greys truly became like the alien in 1965 following the Barney and Betty Hill abduction. The Hill couple claimed to have been abducted on September 19th, 1961 and returned to Earth the following day. Two cool facts I gleaned from them on their Wikipedia page. One, they were an interracial couple in the 60s, which, gotta call it out, way more dangerous than the aliens.
For sure.
Easily. And that they also, like, the picture on their Wikipedia page...
Wait, to be clear, way more dangerous to be in an interracial couple, not interracial couples.
Yeah, that's a good qualifier.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah.
I got your hood fresh from the dry cleaner there, Peter.
Yeah. Thank you. Just
not now.
Fold it. Fold the robe, then lay out the hood. Like, I don't want any wrinkles in the point.
Can I guess what your second point might be?
Sure.
They have the same names as the Flintstone characters?
No, that's... Is it? No.
Barney and Betty Rubble, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. No, that wasn't it. Is the fact that their Wikipedia photo, they have a very fat wiener dog named Delcy, where Betty is holding him and his gut is hanging down past her forearm.
Oh man, that must be tough for the wiener because their legs aren't even that long. So
I know he's like a caterpillar basically. You're just like dragging it around.
Oh man, you gotta put like you know like how dogs have the wheelchairs for their back legs sometimes. You just gotta put one underneath the gut so you can drag it around. You know.
So that's funny. Like we had mentioned it earlier, the cyberpunk studio. I know one of the few things I know about Judge Dredd is that like the obese people of that like comic's future have like a gut wheel where they have like a, it's like a dish that you put your gut in and you can like wheel it around in front of you basically.
I mean, yeah, like Baron Harkonnen in Dune just has like a floating, like he's too fat to walk and he just has like a floating disc that he sits on basically to carry him
really?
Everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know he floats around in the movies. I didn't know what the actual book described it as.
Yeah, he's basically he's sitting on like a semi-sphere, I guess.
Okay.
That floats him around. It is Barney and Betty Rubble, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And so, and I looked up when Barney's first appearance was 1959, so 2 years before these people were abducted. Just a coincidence that there's a Barney and a Betty.
Okay. So these people.
There's a UFO that goes up to the drive-thru and they put dinosaur ribs and it makes the whole UFO tilt.
Yeah, so the Rubbles were driving back from their vacation on the Canadian side of Niagara. The Rub Hills. We're driving back from a vacation on the Canadian side of Niagara, as well as Montreal. I didn't think I would get to talk about our city twice. Like, one, MKUltra, cool. And two, these people got abducted on their way home to New Hampshire.
Nice.
Near Lancaster, New Hampshire, Betty claimed to have observed a bright point of light in the sky that moved from below the moon and the planet Jupiter upward to the west and then back to our moon.
Wow.
Naturally, like every fucking alien abduction, the Hills were on an isolated road in the middle of nowhere when the UFO encounter happened. It's basically like anytime someone is just like, I know a shortcut, you're gonna get abducted by aliens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, driving the back roads. This was before MapQuest, dude. You know how dangerous it was to take a shortcut back in the day?
How convenient that alien abductions just all completely stopped once we got camera phones and MapQuest.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Working portable cameras really did a number on the UFOs coming to visit.
Yeah,
but they understood that if they came to visit now, they were going to get photographed. And that's against interplanetary regulations, you know? They're still allowed to use chemical warfare, but they're not allowed to be photographed. That's a rule. So,
For the young folks out there, we lived through a weird time between maps, which you would buy at a store to find directions, and GPS, where you would go and type in your, like, basically Google Maps, where your current address is, where you're going, and you would print out the directions.
Print it out, yeah. And MapQuest was terrible. It was always wrong.
Yeah.
It would always get you lost. Yeah.
It would always get you abducted by aliens with your wife and your fat wiener dog. Every single time. So eventually, what they described as the odd-shaped craft came close enough for the couple to see through the windows. So this was very much like they described the flying saucer with the window panels all around where like the two dome halves would sit, right? Like if you imagine a flying saucer, it's got a ring of windows. This is where they described slim gray humanoids wearing glossy black suits.
Oh. They're classy.
So, exactly. These are expensive aliens.
Yeah, that's it.
A series of buzzing and beeping noises broadcast into their car, and when all was said and done, they discovered that they had traveled 56 kilometers south without any memory of doing so.
Whoa.
That being said, there is a quirk called missing time that, like, truckers encounter. Like, when you're just, like, driving for a long time, sometimes your brain doesn't register whatever. Every single tree on
56 kilometers isn't even that far. that's like a half hour drive.
It's a half hour drive. Like, that's why, like, I don't think this like happened, obviously, but it's a good story, and like it gave us the grays, dude. Like, it's these two that gave us the fucking aliens.
Arthur Flumsby gave us the grays, right?
It was a very stupid British name. Where is it?
It wasn't Aleister Crowley, but he did. Aleister Crowley
did draw one. No, it was Kenneth Fallingsby.
Fallingsby. I was pretty close with the Flemsby.
A very, very goofy British name. So they experienced some missing time. Missing time is like a big factor in a lot of alien abductions. Like, that's why it's always in the middle of fucking nowhere, in the middle of the night. Like, it's like, oh, I don't remember anything. Except I saw a bright light, and then I don't remember anything for a half hour. Must have been aliens. Is like every fucking alien invasion story, or like every abduction story you've ever heard. That right?
Big problem at the XCOM offices for time theft.
That's why they got to unionize.
You didn't clock out for like 3 days. Oh shit, I must have been abducted, dude. Honestly, it's just, you know, I definitely haven't gone home in that time. I don't think I don't remember it.
Kilometers
so.
Off site or anything. Yeah. So when they got home, this part is weird, if true, big if true in this case. When they got home, their watches were both dead and would never work again. Barney's shoes had been destroyed, and the zipper of Betty's dress had been torn out. So the on the back of her dress, the zipper had been torn out of the seams. Allegedly, also, the hood of their car was covered in shiny metal concentric circles that made the needle of a compass spin wildly.
Magnets.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Somebody put magnets in my dang car!
Like the most mundane hate crime for an internet. Just make them believe they got abducted. It's just like, I don't want to hurt anybody, but I don't approve of what they're doing. So we're gonna stage an alien abduction. Betty would come to associate the Greys with Zeta Reticuli, a star system 39 light years from Earth. If you guys want to calculate the football fields, feel free. And this basically became Betty Boy's canon, as the Greys are still from this star system. So Betty Hill kind of coined the fact that the alien Greys are from Zeta Reticuli that has maintained it's like that's the part of it that you need to use in your story. Like, sure, it's public domain, but like, this comes with the Grey concept, basically.
They already found the James Webb telescope. We got our first images like last week or the week before. They already found new oldest universes. Oldest galaxies, rather.
Galaxies.
Oh, cool.
The redshift went up to like a factor of 10 before, and now they're finding up to a factor of 12 to 13. So like 20 to 30% farther than before. Yeah.
Yeah, factor.
I don't know how that actually works, but
I guess like way more.
Yeah. It's in the billions and billions of years ago that we're seeing. I think it's like 13 billion years. I watched a video about it yesterday, but
it's interesting implications too, because like our understanding of the universe was like, hey, 10 billion year old galaxies means probably like a 13 billion year old universe or whatever, but it's like, oh, if we have 13 billion year old galaxies, it means the universe is actually older than we thought.
They're like, why did according to our math, it shouldn't have formed a disk this early, but it is a disk. And when you look at the Big Bang, if you like picture it as like in a 2D where it starts as like a point and then opens up into like a big, it kind of like opens, it gets wider and wider as it goes. Mm-hmm. There's this space right between the Big Bang and like where we've seen from the Hubble that is like the dark zone that we don't know about. But now since it's focusing infrared, we're going to see all this stuff that we haven't seen before that's closer to the beginning of the...
Yeah. Another fun fact, 39 light years is 4 quadrillion football fields.
Thank you. I knew one of you would pull up the clip. That's why I put it in there.
I figured convert light year, me...
convert light year to football field on convertunits.com.
Thanks, guys.
I was expecting scientific notation, so I was like, I'm not even going to look it up because I don't understand, like, from looking at scientific notation, how big something really is.
But, yeah, yeah, I use the ones that I would put in my older scripts was always like 4 to the power of 1.1 trillion, whatever that I was doing.
When it's times 10 to the power of, the power of is how many zeros follow the number.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so hard to. If it gets that big, it's like, I'm not going to be able to conceptualize it anyways. So
four quadrillion doesn't mean anything, right?
Yeah. I barely understand having $1,000 in my bank account, which is why I just spend all my money.
Yeah, exactly. It's easy.
That's why I'm in debt, because my credit card bill is just too big to comprehend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also don't understand negative numbers, so I just ignore them, you know?
Yeah.
If the card works, we buy. Yeah.
Negative, positive, what's the difference, honestly?
Yep, cancel each other.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if I get you're telling me I get two of these negative numbers, I get a positive. So like, I'm just going to keep shooting for more negative.
Yeah. Just have a credit card, baby.
Have an even amount of credit cards and you're fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the odd credit card that'll get.
So after the Hill abduction, 73% of all UFO encounters involved Greys. So like, I'll give it to Fallingsby. I'll give it to Crowley, whatever. It was Barney and Betty Rubble, who like really, really brought it up here with the Brontosaurus ribs and shit.
Wow.
I do love that there was like a huge spike in like globalization. So like, you know, news from other countries and other parts of the world and like from across the United States probably, whereas before it was probably like local news, the local newspaper was the only newspaper you read. But now with television, there's this huge spike in, hello, Jamie.
Sorry. In local television, there's this huge, oh my
this
God.
This huge spike in like national television, I guess, as well as this huge uptick in drug use, like or recreational drug use, right?
Yeah.
And like recreational drug types, I guess. And you just see this like throughout the 60s, 70s, 60s and 70s, this like surge of like
alien abduction mania, Bigfoot mania, like all these people just like believing all this crazy, crazy stuff, right? Yep. While simultaneously you have amazing things like the moon landing happening, and like there's now these people who are like, well, no, that was probably...
Well, yeah, the people who think the moon landing is fucking fake definitely think that the Hills were abducted by aliens in New Hampshire, right?
Oh, for
like,
sure.
The Venn diagram of that is just like a circle, probably with like the corona of like a pixel thick black line around it, right? Of like the three of us on the outside.
Wait, because you're saying we believe that the... Are you saying that we don't believe that the moon landing was real, or are you saying that we believe that the Hills were abducted?
Well, I believe that Peter's metaphor is
I guess
flat.
I did fuck up how a Venn diagram works. So like, maybe it was just like the people on the outside are the sane ones. Obviously, like with these becoming like the default alien, including them as the most basic alien in the first XCOM, and then upgrading them in XCOM 2 was kind of a no-brainer. So most of the other aliens within XCOM have pretty basic origins. The chrysalids are based on the alien from the movie Alien. They're big, scary bugs who lay eggs inside your body. If your soldier or an NPC is infected in-game, after I think 3 or 4 turns, the character who's infected will just die, and then a sectoid will hatch out of their body.
Oof.
So that's just based on the alien from the movie. The ethereals, the psychic overlords of all the different alien races within XCOM, claim to have actually given the chrysalids basic intelligence and raised them up from like the planet they were living on just as basic insects. Otherwise, things like floaters are hastily assembled cyborgs made out of leftover mutons, and mutons are the big frontline soldiers of the alien invasion force. So they're basically... they're a very basic genetically modified super soldier, and then the floaters is just like, you died in battle. I guess they're like the dreadnoughts from 40K, like you died in battle, so we're just gonna jam you into this machine so you can keep going, basically.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep fighting for the God Emperor.
Yeah. So the final thing I want to talk about here are the Thin Men, because these guys are also just like very heavily based in real world conspiracies, but like even better ones that, to be fair, have like way better evidence behind them. In game, they appear to be very tall, slim human men wearing business suits, ties, and round black sunglasses.
Oh man, I forgot about these guys. Yeah.
Behind the sunglasses, however, are yellow snake eyes, and on closer inspection, they have scales running up the sides of their necks and along their hairline, actually. So like their toupee is slid back like a half inch over their reptilian head. Yeah. Their faces, actually the character models for the Thin Men, are actually based on Firaxis employee of Civilization fame, Sid Meier.
Oh, no way.
Oh, wow. Dude.
They based the
guy,
him on him.
The guy who made Sim Ant? Come on.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. What Sim Ant creator, Sid golf? Meier.
Oh, this guy, God. He had like some type of good lawyer too to get his name on every fucking game.
He still works at Firaxis. I know. I watched an interview with Jake Solomon, who is the creative director of the new XCOM, and when he got hired at Firaxis, he like went to meet Sid Meier. He was like, yeah, Sid was just in his office and he was just making us dinosaur game by himself that no one will ever get to play, and I'm just like, that sounds so cool. Like, he's just like fucking around with stuff, basically.
He's Canadian American. That's
cool. Oh, is he from Niagara or Montreal? Can we close the loop here?
Yeah. Oh, my Looking eyes are so bad, dude. I'm getting glasses next week, people.
Jamie can't read a Wikipedia page. He was born in Sarnia, Ontario, so kind of close to Niagara.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. Meth country. But, What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. It is revealed that because the aliens have taken over the world in XCOM 2, the reptilians, the Thin Men, no longer need a disguise, and they're revealed to be like hot snake ladies.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah.
Hot snakes is something to do with poop. So when you say hot snake ladies, it's like poop ladies.
Poop ladies?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
They got a throat that works. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
It's all those things.
Snakes unhinge their jaws, baby.
Oh, they won't need to. Don't worry.
You think the Zajari are a good time? Wait till you've got one of these snake ladies with you.
No. Keep it hinged.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah.
There's a thing on Reddit today of this amateur snake, whatever you call, like, you like tamer, I guess.
Snake and, charmer?
Yes, charmer. Yeah. They're like out in the woods and she's holding this big snake. And she's like, it looks like really uncomfortable. And she's grabbing it like way behind the neck. So it has all this range of movement. And then it cuts to just her face like in pain. And the camera zooms out and the snake is bitten right onto where her genitals are. Oh. and she's like screaming, trying to let it get to let go. But it just would not let go. I would never mess with snakes, man. I don't trust them.
Snakes, I'm telling you, Billy, snakes are great. You can do anything you want to them. You can bite them by the pussy.
I mean, yeah, I'm fine with snakes. I don't know if I, like, get it into genital biting range. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Like, get into a situation where it's like, oh, it's, like, probably going to bite me in the genitals. Like, I'm not so cool with, you know? But or generally, like snakes, like, the constrictors, they just, like, kind of chill on your shoulders. Fine with that.
Yeah. Or hold it just behind the head. Like, honestly, I'm like, my thing is, she's like, it's like, oh, it's she's holding it behind the neck. Like, and I'm like, where's the neck on a snake?
It's all neck.
up until that little butthole and a tail, technically. Because yeah. You can see the division there. But, like, otherwise, like, where does it stop?
It's neck all the way down.
Yeah. I want a girl with a long neck and a long jacket.
No legs
and a long neck.
So the inspiration for the Thin Men, the barely disguised reptilian monsters, are based on the reptilians, and they're kind of like a meme now. Yes. Because like people are like, oh, Queen Elizabeth is a lizard, and like every politician ever is a lizard. Like, I mean, all
yeah, you say they're a meme, except to the people who guys, any conspiracy theory, except to the people who fucking believe this shit.
Yeah, okay, right? That's
like,
fair.
Alex Jones talks about them a lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
MK Ultra refugee Alex Jones, like yeah, that's yeah, exactly. Talking about?
Yeah, MK Ultra survivor. Okay.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry.
Respect. Yeah.
However, the reptilians seem to have been created by a sci-fi author named Helena Blavatsky in the 19th century, and they were part of her like weird concept of theosophy. She describes the Masters, who are a race of highly evolved humanoids who basically did all the important stuff in antiquity. So she's kind of the person who started Ancient Aliens, it would seem, because like Jesus, the Buddha, Moses, and even like more modern people like Confucius were all part of the Masters as far as she was concerned.
Is Confucius that modern? When was Confucius around?
I mean, he's way newer than Jesus. Like, I'm pretty sure people like met him, not to
he's 551. He died 479 years before Jesus was born, dude.
Confucius is a BC guy.
Yeah, 551 BC.
I was like,
I've seen pictures of the guy before. He must be
yeah,
old.
Yeah, that's because I've seen like good artist representations of Confucius. I thought he was like from, I don't know, like the year 900 or something.
No, I mean maybe it's just you got to remember like the Xin Empire is like 5,000 years old, right? Like,
oh yeah, okay.
China is much older than the West, so.
Yeah, or the Middle East for that matter, considering yeah. He's 400 years older than Jesus.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Masters were then adapted into the Serpent Men by Conan creator Robert E. Howard in 1929. And then he wrote that they once ruled the lost continent of Lemuria, which is just like a different Atlantis. It's just another, like, I mean, he made it up. He was just like, no one will ever believe this. But
the
obviously, Lemuria and Atlantis.
We talked about this. The Lakes of yeah. Lemuria in Elden Ring.
It's Lemuria in Elden Ring, but exactly.
No, we definitely talked about this. Like, I've heard this before, and then I just Googled it, and the Wikipedia page was purple, so.
Yeah.
We definitely made a comparison, I think. Yep. And there it is, the writings of Blavatsky.
Yeah. So the first reported abduction by a reptilian was in 1967, when Nebraska police officer Herbert Schreimer revealed under hypnosis that he had previously been taken. So again, ooh. Another very believable story.
Oh, yeah.
The reptilians were made most popular by the purest form of maniac currently known, David Icke, which is a name you may have heard. Yeah. This guy is completely, completely unhinged.
He was the guy who was the one half of Mike and Ike, right?
Correct.
There's yeah, David Mike and David Icke.
Yeah, he was driven out of the company of the candy company for being too crazy. He just got politically too hard to be around.
Okay, yeah.
Just candy pilled.
Yeah. I was reading about David Icke, and I was gonna put some stuff in here, but like a lot of his conspiracies get pretty dark, so read about him if you want, but I left it out of here for that reason. So he popularized the idea of the reptilians, that like many if not all powerful people in all of history were reptilians in his 1999 book, The Biggest Secret. So, like, the fact that, like, the U.S. government, like, Republican, Democrat, every single one of them are all reptilians. The royal family, there was, like, some other European family that was very powerful for a while, whose name escapes me right now, that are all, that, like, they're all reptilians as well.
Can I just say, he was also the guy that popularized, David Icke was also the guy who popularized COVID-19 and being related to 5G.
Yes. Yeah.
Which you were joking which you were joking about either before the episode or right at the beginning of the episode. So.
Yeah. 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 David Icke, like, is still around, still spreading complete nonsense. Like, there are some, like, Jewish conspiracies that he promotes as well.
Yeah. It says anti-Semitism on this Wikipedia page a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's why I kind of blew past it. Like, sometimes
you read more like David Yikes. Said. Exactly.
Yeah. David Yikes. Yeah. Like, you read some of the stuff, it's just like, the guy is probably too crazy to be a bigot. But, like, regardless, read about him at your own risk. is my recommendation.
Crazy enough to be a bigot, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I read some of the stuff, I got into it and, like, took it out, because it's just like, I don't think this guy believes that the people he's talking about are, like, of this earth. So, like, can you really be a bigot if you think they're space aliens? Like,
you don't
hate anybody real.
Now, this is the theosophical discussion that we're qualified to have here on Big Bumpin'.
Yeah.
Big Bumpin' in the morning.
Yeah,
Big
Bumpin'
in the morning. Yeah,
bigots. It's like that bigot being like, bumpin'. You have to
that's our after hours one. Yeah. Yeah. Edgy. That's our Howard Stern show.
You have to be good enough at something to know you're bad at something. Same thing. You have to be, like, smart enough to know you're a bigot or whatever. If you're dumb enough and a bigot, you don't know you're a bigot. Are you still a bigot?
Yeah,
this was Dunning wrote about, not Kruger.
Yeah. Like, the stuff I was reading about him was just like, I think this guy's too crazy to realize what he's saying is, like, anti-Semitic. Like, I
all
don't
bad,
know.
Though. All bad, and we disagree.
Well, yeah, that's it. We're just
5G doesn't cause COVID.
we're splitting semantics here, where it's like, I would call them, I think you could be an ignorant bigot. I think all bigots are ignorant.
Based in ignorance, yeah.
If we start saying, like, to what degree does it count? I don't know. That feels bad to me.
Is it when you think bad. People are lizards? Like, maybe it doesn't count anymore, like,
yeah.
What's a lizard threshold, basically?
I'd say the more ignorant, the worse. It just keeps getting worse.
Yeah
He popularized the idea that politicians and kings and queens were all reptilians throughout all of history in his 1999 book, The Biggest Secret. In the clip below in the script for patrons, or if you want to look it up yourself, if you're okay with Louis C.K., speaking of troublesome people, Louis C.K. was on the Opie and Anthony show, where they had George W. Bush's Secretary of State, Donald Rumsfeld, on, who is, like, you know, like, him and Dick Cheney are really responsible for all those civilians who got killed in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he straight up asks him if he is a lizard or if he knows any other lizards in government who have eaten human babies. And spoilers for someone who just doesn't want to listen to the clip. Rumsfeld proceeds to not answer the question, completely dodges it, and tells an unrelated story about getting dinner in New York City.
Both the book, The Biggest Secret, and the name Louis C.K. has a lot of S sounds in it. So these serpents would have a hard time with it, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Or they'd have an easy time.
Or an easy time with it, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, I think T-H is probably harder for a serpent, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
If you think about it.
Serpent with a lisp, I love it.
So guys, we got to code our message. The has to code.
That's how you charm a snake. You give them enough THs in a row, they just will never bite your genitals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say that snake would have bit me right on the pussy.
I posted in the boys. We can watch it together after the episode. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. So the design of the thin men in game is inspired by the real life Men in Black. Who also inspired the comic of the same name. If you guys want to open the last reference there, you can see some creepy security footage of two guys in trilbies walking through some automatic doors.
They got, like, extra wide shoulders, like that Kanye West music video, too.
Yeah.
They look like they don't belong in suits.
This is some of my favorite. This one would weird me out, because this picture is from 2006, I believe, and is from a hotel in Niagara, where the owner and the security guard of the hotel claimed to have seen a triangular UFO. A couple of days later, neither one of them were there, but the security camera took this footage, which you can find on YouTube, and the staff claimed that these two very creepy-looking men who behaved bizarrely came into the hotel and started asking for the owner and the security guard and, like, intimidating and harassing people. So from the late 40s and 60s, people who claimed to have seen or been abducted by UFOs also started reporting that they were being intimidated by men wearing black suits and sunglasses.
Gotcha.
Some UFO witnesses have even been allegedly assassinated by men in black for knowing too much. Yeah. And they've often been described as, like, looking strange and behaving oddly. The men from Niagara specifically were both described as very pale and, like, complete alopecia, no eyebrows, no hair on their heads, nothing. But they have, like, dark red lips, like they kind of have blush on their lips to add a little bit of color. And they speak in a monotone voice and, like, act very bizarrely. Actor, comedian, and UFO enthusiast Dan Aykroyd actually claims that in 2002, when he was shooting a Paranormal Activity show in New York City, he was kind of accosted briefly by a man in black, and then that the show was abruptly canceled and all the footage was destroyed.
What?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, public drug addict Dan Aykroyd. But...
Yeah, exactly. Crystal Skull Vodka and UFO enthusiast Dan Aykroyd, exactly.
Well, at least that disproves ghosts in my head, because the ghosts didn't stop Ghostbusters from getting made.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, there was that one guy who was talking about someone who looked kind of like an alien, and he did get slapped by a minute. It was Chris Rock at the Oscars, right? He didn't get slapped by a Men in Black. So
the reptilian or the Men in Black thing kind of went away for a bit, kind of after the movie, before the Oscars, but came back in 2013 when people realized that one of Obama's Secret Service guys was just ugly in a weird way.
Can you imagine being the genesis of that conspiracy theory? Like,
or you bring it back.
Like these circles of deranged people on the internet being like, he's too ugly to be human. And you're just there like, God damn it.
Yeah, it's like the stress of working for the Secret Service made you lose your eyebrows. And all of a sudden people think like you tried to assassinate Dan Aykroyd. It's like, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah,
he also deleted all the texts from January 6th, whenever the Dan Aykroyd assassination went down. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's XCOM and some of the inspiration behind a couple of the aliens with like the most interesting conspiracies behind them. I had a blast putting this one together, minus the David Icke shit. But thanks for listening, everybody. I've been your host, Peter O'Donnell. You can find me at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram or creep in the Discord, which is linked below or linked at theloreboys.com/about. Lads.
Yeah, Jamie, what's going on in Jamie Land these days, huh?
Not too much. I started playing World of Warcraft again. Everybody knew it was going to happen. So I'm on Feralina. If anyone's on Feralina and wants to link up and play and stuff like that, I'll be on doing my dailies each day so we can go to Keldanos together and do some fun stuff together if you like, because it's always faster in a group. Other than that, Discord. Discord's the way to get a hold of me. I'm always in the Discord. We've made a few changes in the last week. If you're having any issues with the Discord, feel free to poke me. There might be more changes coming up, but Discord.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you guys want to help the show, you can leave us a review on your podcasting app of choice and just tell your friends and family about us. We appreciate it a lot. For somebody who requested the last mailbag that we recorded, it'll come out eventually. I think we're kind of squirreling it away for a rainy day, for a week that maybe we don't have an episode. I said it, I think, last week, but I do have a baby on the way, so recording might be a little bit more sporadic pretty soon. That will come out eventually, and if you guys want to be featured on the next mailbag, you can send an email to contact@loreboys.com or loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. Either of those will work, and we'll make sure to read it on the next episode. Just make sure to let us know if there's any parts you don't want us to read. Otherwise, we're reading your friggin' email on the air, collections agents. Okay? Yeah.
Full name and address.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make sure to include your serial number, or your serial number, Jesus, your social security number, so that we can make sure that you're not actually a robot, sending in multiple, you're not a bot, just sending in multiple emails to get us to read them all. We're going to need a valid social security number in order to verify that. You don't think someone
in black? You don't think it's Obama's suspiciously ugly Secret Service guy?
Yeah, so if you guys want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get the script that Peter's referenced a few times throughout this this episode. You guys will get 30 minutes on the dot of bonus content this week, released every Thursday when Jamie remembers, as well as the looser titles, some of the fun inside jokes from this week's episode. You get them ahead of this week's episode to try and guess what we talked about. I'd be amazed if anybody got it this week, but we'll find out in 20 minutes or so if anybody if anybody can get it. And of course, if you guys want to support the show and you don't believe in money or banks or institutions like that, because they're all run by lizards anyway, we do have Lore Boys Prime, of course, and we're in need of some help this week, some serious help from you guys. We need the best, we need the bravest, we need the most alien looking. We are starting a secret service for the Lore Boys. We have racked up some enemies over the years, that's for sure. So we do need some people willing to step into the line of duty and jump in front of a ray gun for us if need be. We will need to know a couple things about you, obviously, before applying. There will be a physical, which will include a probing, of course. You know, you'll need to be able to go for long overnight drives, just in case, you know, mostly through the countryside and along shortcuts is what we're looking for.
You got to remember the whole thing, too. You got to describe it to me when you get back.
Yeah, in vivid detail.
We don't use gloves in the probing because I feel like our own like temperature of our hands is kind of like the best thermometer, right? You'll know if someone's too warm or too cold.
No, yeah.
Or cold like a lizard.
Yeah.
I mean, latex was actually once used in alien weather balloons that they dropped on Roswell, New Mexico. So I'm not putting those on my hand. They're directly linked to 5G virus. So
you're right.
Not going to do it. You can't make me. And it's just the way that it is. But do apply. It'll be a good process for you, I think.
We're thorough.
And then, once we have your social security number, as well as, you know, a blood sample, a fingerprint sample, and a thorough probing, then we'll get back to you in 6 to 9 months, basically, and let you know whether or not you got them. And I think that would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Clicked on her LinkedIn, so it got.
It's gonna show, yeah. It's
she's
gonna show.
Get a notification that profile. I looked at her LinkedIn.
Oh, okay. This is what we gotta do. This is what we gotta do. If she hasn't got it yet, because who checks their LinkedIn notifications?
She had very few connections, so I don't think she uses it often.
Once a month, maybe, right?
Yeah,
what we gotta do, because what LinkedIn will do, is if we get the lore folk, the prime folk here, to all look her up, then it'll say you have to pay for like LinkedIn Pro to view like everybody who viewed your profile.
Right. It'll bury mine.
Once you get past like three people, it just gets buried. It says like, and this other many people viewed it. Pay us, Microsoft, if you want to see who did it.
Okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.